Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us here at Voices for Change 2.0.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for being with us on this wonderful late March Saturday morning. Really quick, got to get this out of my way because yesterday was my beautiful wife Rebecca's birthday. Happy birthday, baby.
Thank you. So excited about it.
Notice how her voice went down when we're discussing that. So we got some exciting stuff planned for later on today. Actually getting some family and friends together and going and doing painting with a twist, which, yeah. You know, I don't know if all of our listeners out there have this particular place or places like it around them, but it's a lot of fun if you have a group of people and you're looking for something to do. Basically what the idea is, you know, you book it for a couple hours. It's a little pricey, but it's worth it because, like I said, it's a lot of fun. You get together with a bunch of people.
You get to keep your painting.
You pick out a picture that you want to paint. They do a painting class for you. You get to drink while you're doing it. You can bring your own beer or wine or nothing hard alcohol and, you know, bring some snacks, and we're going to have some cake for her. And it should be a lot of fun. We did it once. My cousin did this a couple of years ago, and we had a blast. So with Rebecca turning the age that she's turned.
It's okay, you can say.
All right, yeah, she turned 45, which is kind of a nice age. So we're doing that.
An
you
old
know.
Age.
It's not old, woman. Knock it off. You're not old, for God's sake.
All right.
So also, it occurs to me, because I don't know if we're broadcasting next week. Next week is Easter weekend. Are we?
We have someone scheduled.
Okay, then
well,
I guess.
No, it's Caitlin and Tyler. All right, we're going on.
That was last week.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. I don't have the calendar in front of me.
Okay.
So.
No problem, babe.
It'll be all right.
It'll be all right. We'll figure it out. Either way, you're going to hear from us on that weekend anyway, so we'll be around. But yeah. Happy Easter regardless. So if you celebrate that. Happy Passover to our Jewish friends. And that's about all I have to say about
okay,
that.
Okay, well, good.
Yeah, before I dig myself into a hole of some kind, but
yeah,
I'm sure I will.
You're fine.
Okay.
So our guest today is actually very well known, especially on social media, as a mental health advocate. He is an author and a blogger who just really churns out the blogs, and they're all informative and necessary, and I'm so jealous of his ability to keep writing and, you know, just because I'm stuck. I've been stuck for months. So whenever I see somebody that's able to turn out blog after blog after blog, I get so envious. But
don't be jealous of our guest.
But no, he does a great job and has a lot of respect for the mental health community, and we're just really glad to have him with us today. So welcome to the show, Mr. Don Shetterly.
Well, welcome, and I'm glad to be here, and good morning, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us, Don. We appreciate you taking time to be on our humble little show today.
Yeah, I'm glad things are working this time, so.
Yeah.
So are we, let me tell you.
What he's referring to is the last time we tried to record with him, Blog Talk Radio was having some temperamental issues.
It was, as they say, incommunicado.
Yeah, and the funny part about it was I had tweeted about it, and I don't know if you saw it, Don, but they tweeted back to me the following day that they still didn't even have it fixed.
Yeah, I saw that, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's rough.
But I've been involved in enough technical stuff in my life that you know, seems normal, so, you know, the show must go on.
Indeed. Well, at least we were able to have you on today, and we're happy and we're grateful for that. And again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. You know, it means a lot to us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Do you have any questions for us before we plunge ahead?
Not right off, I don't.
Okay. Well, okay. if you think of anything, please don't hold back. Say, hey, I want to ask you.
Okay.
And then follow that.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So. All right. So talk with us a little bit about, excuse me, me losing my voice. talk with us a little bit about where your mental health journey begins.
Well, several years ago, I can't remember, I guess it was back in 1991, I went through what they call conversion disorder. And conversion disorder basically left me paralyzed with what they call pseudo seizures, ability where I couldn't basically talk hardly. I could get one word out maybe every 5-10 minutes. I couldn't move my arms, my legs, take care of myself. And that's kind of where things started. It wasn't my choice. I didn't get to say, oh, I'm going to start down this journey. It just happened. And it happened suddenly that, you know, I was actually going to church at the time, and it was a Sunday afternoon. I came home. I was tired. My back was hurting. And next thing I know, I laid down for a nap, and that's the last time I could walk again for several weeks.
So, wow.
That's kind of how my journey started. So.
Wow.
That's got to be terrifying.
Really?
Yeah, it was, because at the time there was no internet, there was no, I mean, the doctors didn't know. At first they thought I had multiple sclerosis. That's what the initial diagnosis was. They sent me to all kinds of tests, I mean, MRIs, blood work, you know, all kinds of things. They put me on medication, which made things worse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole time they would just send me home and say, we don't know what to do with you. And, you know, when you have family members, especially the ones that did some of the stuff they did to me, when you have those people taking care of your very, how should I say this, intimate things in life, that's very difficult. So.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know.
Well, we're glad that you were able to overcome that.
Yeah, really. What? How long until they actually figured out what was going on with you? I mean, was that? Did that take years, or?
In my case, it took a couple weeks before, you know, they kept going doctor to doctor, and finally one neurologist said, you know, we need to admit you to the hospital and run some tests. And it was like, oh, thank God. You know, I was just like, finally, somebody's, you know, in this for what it was. And, you know, so they ran me through more tests, and then I didn't even realize what the diagnosis was for a long time, because in conversion disorder, one of the schools of thought is you don't tell the person exactly what it is because it could make things worse. And I went for several months before I really knew what the actual diagnosis was. I just knew that I had to come back into life, and that was, you know, learning to walk, learning to sit up, to walk. My memory went, you know, the whole works. So all those things I had to come back to, and that took, you know, weeks and months. So a lot of people with conversion disorder don't come out of it that easily. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of them, they struggle for most of their life.
Wow. Man, and, you know, with the way the healthcare industry is in this country and has been since it hit you back in 91, I mean, that had to have been, and don't go into it, but it had to have been ridiculously expensive as well. And, you know, having all those medical bills hanging over your head, which, again, is another reason why we should have universal health care. But that's, I'm just one voice in the wilderness.
Right. I totally agree.
yeah, you know, but, I mean, that's just crazy. Did they say what triggered it? Were they able to figure that out?
Well, it took a long time to really piece that part together, because for a long time you're just sitting there dealing with the symptoms, the paralysis, the not being able, you know, the pseudo seizures, the not being able to talk, remember, those kind of things. So the basic premise is you've got to get past that. But it took I would say many, many years later when I met Dr. Canale in Miami, and even for the longest time after seeing him, I happened to do an interview, and in there he was talking to the guy, and he says, yeah, there was this event that happened, and that's what set the whole thing off. Little did I realize way back that I was working in a company that we managed big hog farms, and one of the farms I had a fire in it. And so I went through the horrors of arriving there the next morning and seeing what had happened, and it was devastating. But the part that connected that back to the trigger was the fact of watching my cats and my animals be killed. And this is where it gets a little tough to talk about, but my cats and my animals being killed by one of the people that abused me. And hearing those screams of what they went through is the connection to what I saw in the fire, and which set off the whole cascade of events.
Wow.
Oh God, that's horrible.
That's horrendous.
Oh. And even so sorry.
This is many years later, and it still chokes me up just to even say those words. I mean, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Wow, you definitely have our sympathy and our love, Don. I have no words.
Yeah,
you know, I really don't. So,
yeah, and I've since found out that people that tend to abuse animals or do those kind of things have some pretty serious issues in their past. I mean, there's something that happened.
Really?
So, it doesn't excuse what happened, but at least, you know, when I see that, it's like, oh, it's a red flag to me. So,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I've got I won't go into how strong, but I have very, very strong feelings and opinions about those that do abuse animals. I'm gonna leave it right there because I'll get angry, and you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. So. I'm going to go on to the next question. Let's change things up a little bit.
Okay.
Please discuss with us unified therapy.
Unified therapy is something that Dr. Canale, he's a pioneer in this whole trauma treatment world. He does stuff that I have never seen anybody else come close to do. Unified therapy is basically, he's looking at all these different modalities out there, these different schools of thought, different ways of working with people, and he tries to go in and pull out like a core truth out of each one. And then not only is it, you know, a concept, but it's actually how he puts it in practice, where he takes you into your body, where you start to feel things, not in an overwhelming way, but just in a small way. So you start to turn on what we call the felt sense. And that felt sense isn't like, oh, I'm going into pain and trauma and horror. That felt sense is just that normal part of the body, you know, feeling, you know, clear down in the cells, the tissues, the muscles. It's that inner part that remembers what happened when we're abused, even if it doesn't have the story or you can't articulate the story, it's there. So what unified therapy does is it takes that. You start from that premise, and then you just start taking the person through, but you don't take them into the part where they're overwhelmed. You take them maybe just to the edge of that and then back them off a little bit. And so they can kind of come back to a place of rest and stillness, and then you take them maybe a little bit further and then come back. You're trying to create that resiliency in the nervous system where it can handle more and it can bring about awareness, consciousness, and change from the physical body into the mental side of things. So that's
so. Just so I make sure I understand it correctly, because I think I get it. what he's doing is he's bringing about the almost to the physical
trauma.
Trauma, the physical manifestation, without going to the mental part of it.
Yeah, eventually you'll connect the two, but it starts out on the physical side, and it's more kind of what comes up at that moment, and then you just build from that point. So it's, it is hard to explain. It's more easier to to go through the process and see it, but it goes from, I mean, the first thing that happens when we go in on a session is we're asked to start feeling and sensing in our body, and whatever that is, that's kind of where we build from. But okay. You're trying not to go all the way to here's the full-blown story. You're focusing more on the body and healing that part of it, which ultimately connects in with the mind.
Right, because when you go through a trauma, you know, you've got obviously the mental part of it that, you know, affects you and can affect you for years, but there's a physical component to it as well. You know, you get the anxiety feelings, the heart racing or what have you. And people, I think, sometimes don't pay attention to that, or they ignore that as a thing. So then later on, if you get hit with those feelings again, you know, you don't know, you know, it's like you're a deer in the headlights kind of feeling.
Right. And that's part of trauma. I mean, it, you know, in order to survive, you have to kind of numb and disconnect, because if you're going through, you know, let's say being raped or molested or whatever it is, that, I mean, there's no way for, especially for a young kid, there's no way for even an adult sometimes to understand, you know, what's going on. And so the only thing you can do is kind of numb and disconnect from the situation. And that's what, I mean, you know, that's what trauma does, and it keeps you in that. So what Dr. Canale and Unified Therapy is doing is trying to turn that system back on, but do it in a way that's safe and not, you know, not where you're just re-traumatizing yourself.
Right.
That's interesting. It is.
Yeah. That numbing and disconnect is so prevalent. I mean, it's, you know, we all do it. And so it's
right.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your book, Hope and Possibility Through Trauma.
So Hope and Possibility Through Trauma really was never meant to be shared as a book. It was stuff I started writing. And, in fact, I just saw on Twitter here the other day, somebody, and I can't remember who it was, somebody shared an article that the more you write, the more you basically help heal yourself.
Right.
And so my writing was to help heal myself. And it's a lot of different writings at different points in that process. Some are a little bit darker. Some are more hopeful. But I was trying to show that, you know, through this writing, there's hope and there's possibility through the trauma. There's more. There's a light beyond the end of the, you know, the end of the tunnel. And that's kind of where that came about. And I'm actually working on a new book right now, too. So.
Oh, great.
Well, yeah,
awesome.
We were going to ask you about that. You told me that you were editing a new book. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the new book is going to be called Overcoming Challenges. We all kind of know what that's, you know, what challenges are in our lives. But I'm really working a little bit more to kind of develop the story of what happened when I went through conversion disorder in the hospital. But I want it to be one, here's what, you know, I did to come out of it. Because I've had so many people say, well, how did you come out of conversion disorder? How did you work through this? And for a long time, that was a hard question to answer. And so this book is focusing a little bit more on the concepts. It's not a step-by-step process, but more of the concepts. Here's the things that I embrace that helped me, you know, get through where I was at to the point where I'm at now.
Wow. And I'm really happy that your work is bringing awareness to conversion disorder, because I'll be honest with you, we've been doing this well over, you know, a year and a half, and this is the first that I've been made aware of it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it before either.
And you know, it's fascinating and scary at the same time. And
yeah, it's very rare. I mean, I went from 1991 through till I think it was around 2012, something like that, before I met another person that had gone through this. So it's rare.
Wow.
And now I've met...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, now I've met several, so I think it's not quite as rare as it once was. So
I was going to ask you, did they think that you had maybe had a stroke? Was that one of the possibilities at the beginning?
If they did, they didn't discuss it with me. So I tried to go back and grab all my medical records, but it was too many years went by, so I'm not sure if they looked at that or not. I know they tested just about everything that they could.
Yeah.
That's like a testing pincushion.
I can imagine so. You know, and the way you describe it, I don't know how similar or different it is, but it reminds me of, do you remember the movie Awakenings?
Vaguely.
Yep.
Vaguely.
I remember the title, but I don't remember the actual body of the film.
Robin Williams was in it.
Yeah, Robin Williams, I think, was it De Niro? I don't remember now, but I know Robin Williams was in it. And I remember that had to do with encephalitis, which, you know, was not a trauma-based thing. It was an actual, like a virus type thing or something. I don't want to give out the wrong information and,
right.
And, you know, miscommunicate things, but I know that, you know, it was a similar thing where, you know, people were, you know, they couldn't move. They were kind of catatonic kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a little different.
That's one thing with conversion. I mean, you know, first of all, you have no clue what's going on. Nobody else does either. And you know, I remember sitting, in fact, this kind of came up in my therapy sessions not too many months back, but I remember sitting there in a, you know, basically in a wheelchair on the couch and going through these, it's like a seizure almost. They call it pseudo seizures, but it's like if somebody has an epileptic seizure, kind of the same thing. And okay. Everybody just standing there watching you, and you're like, you can't say nothing, but, oh, you just want somebody to come over and just touch you or just reassure you it's going to be okay or, you know, and those were pretty difficult moments that I didn't realize impacted me quite as much as they did until just a few months ago. So, I mean, it's when you see it's pretty intense.
Jeez. Well, let's see, where are we at? Question
was we're going to do this one.
That one? Okay. We are prepared. So, What are your thoughts on the stigma surrounding mental illness?
I remember back when I first started going to counseling, and I was so scared of anybody finding out that I was going to see a therapist. And this was long after, you know, I'd come out of the conversion disorder, you know, I was back to functioning. But I wouldn't even, I mean, my boss didn't know where I was going. I didn't even go to a therapist in the town I lived. I drove 60 miles to the town, and wow. I didn't want anybody to see me. I didn't want them to know. I didn't want my boss to even know, so I would tell my boss I just had, I might have said a doctor's appointment or something. I don't remember what I said. But yeah. I was afraid, and in those days, I had told my therapist, too, I said, if you have to call where I work, I said, don't give them any indication because I don't want anybody to know. I felt so horrible that I had to go to counseling. And, you know, the shame of what I went through and the shame of, you know, just the depression, anxiety, suicide that I struggled with, it made it where I, you know, of course, it's like, please, nobody find out this horrible secret about myself. But I may be getting a little off track on your question, but
you're absolutely fine. That actually part of your response led me to another question, really, which was, you know, when you went through, conversion disorder, you know, how bad did it? I mean, did it prompt you towards other afflictions like, you know, depression and, you know, you mentioned, possible suicide and, you know, was it like prevalently invasive? Was the therapist able to help you with those feelings?
Yeah. When I went through conversion, I was in a regular hospital, and then I actually went to a psychiatric hospital for I think it was about 3 weeks, but the doctor I had, he wanted to put me on medication for depression and anxiety, and I was like, oh no, I'm not depressed, I'm not anxious.
Yeah. And
so I fought him. I was like, you're not giving me medication. And I'm laughing about it because it was a kind of a struggle between me and the doctor. And I mean, every day he was like, no, we need to do medication. I was like, no, I'm not doing medication. And I fought him hard. And he said, finally, he says, okay, we're going to do it your way. If that doesn't work, will you agree to do it my way? And so I finally agreed. But I struggled with depression horribly. I mean, that was part of that whole experience, the anxiety. And then with other events that happened after I got out of the hospital, I mean, there was times that, I mean, I really did try to kill myself. I did not want to be alive because it was just, there was just too much to deal with and it was too difficult.
Yeah.
I can understand those feelings.
Yeah, that's, you know, and again, you know, we're both so sorry that you went through all that, you know.
Definitely.
But we're happy that you're here with us.
You're here to tell the story.
That's right. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, we, part of our deal with our show is to educate. And, you know, having you on, having you tell your story, you know, that's a huge step in education, you know, so.
Not to mention there may be people out there that have seen this, been through it, you know, have family members that have been through it and, mm-hmm. you know, are feeling, you know, alone at this point.
Isolated,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's good to find common ground.
Right, to know that you're not alone in this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'll tell you what, Don. Yeah, I know when I went through it, there was moments that, I mean, I remember just hiding in the four walls of my apartment. I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to see anybody. I struggled to, you know, if I heard noises outside the door, I was like, oh, shut the curtains and hide. So,
yeah.
You know,
we do that now.
When you talk about being alone, I mean, that's, I felt alone. I didn't feel like there was anybody that really understood.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm as open as I am and I talk as much and write as much as I do. Because
that's awesome.
I know what it's like to feel alone and like there's nobody else that understands.
Exactly.
Mm. Well, we've got to take our first break, Don. But
okay.
We will be back on the other side. And this is No One Is Alone by Alexander Rodriguez.
Here to guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone. People make mistakes, fathers, mothers, people make mistakes, holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes, everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right, and giants can be good. You decide what's right, you decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side. Someone else is not. While you're seeing your side, tried. Maybe you forgot that they are not alone. No one is alone. Hard to see the light now. Just don't let it go. Things will come out right now. We can make it so. Someone is on your side. No one is alone. Hey,
welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. The beautiful woman sitting next to me is the birthday girl, Rebecca.
And, don't remind me.
And we have on the line the lovely and talented Mr. Don Shetterly. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, do we sing happy birthday now or later?
Oh, no, we don't.
No, we're not going to put her through that. little funny side story here.
Are you going to talk about the pledge we made?
The pledge, yes, I'm exactly going to talk about that. So we're dating. We're not even married yet, right?
Right.
And
16 years ago.
Yeah, and nowhere near either of our birthdays, but we're out to eat, and it's, I don't know, Red Robin or some kind of place like that, Applebee's, and it's somebody's birthday, and the entire restaurant staff is singing happy birthday to this person. And in that moment, we looked at each other and said, we are never doing that to each other. And 16 plus years of marriage later, we have never done that to each other. So that's kind of a unwritten rule for us. If we're ever actually out on either of our birthdays, that doesn't happen.
Song.
Yeah. No birthday song. So
yeah, no, don't torture each other.
Exactly.
What do you feel that we can do going forward when it comes to mental health stigma? Do you have any insight as to what, you know, would be the next steps?
I think you're correct that the awareness and education is key. I think that anybody that's been through this, the more they can write or do podcasts or videos and share with others, even if they don't think that, you know, they're professional or they're good enough, just that raw, authentic vulnerability, I think helps so many other people. And so, you know, the more everybody can share and trust themselves to share that, even if it means stepping out of their comfort zone just a little bit, I think those things help others recognize that, hey, I see in you something I recognize in myself, and now I don't feel alone. And to me, that's just one of the best things I think that we can do as anybody that's been through either child abuse or trauma or mental health issues or suicide. I mean, I think we really need to know that, you know, from that authentic personal moment that somebody else is standing there with us. I know there's one thing that's come up lately I've seen is that, you know, everybody wants to say thoughts and prayers. Why that makes good and why people may not, you know what else to say, to me it's a little hollow. It's not, you know, connecting where somebody needs to connect with you. So it's through that vulnerability and sharing yourself that I think it really helps others advance.
I agree with you. You know, I think at one point in time it was, you know, a legitimate, you know, well wish for people that have gone through stuff, you know, and there, you know, in some situations, you know, it does still ring true. You know, last week or a couple weeks ago, something like that, you know, filmmaker Kevin Smith went through a heart attack and a massive one. And during the course of that, Chris Pratt went on Twitter and, you know, was doesn't know him at all, but wished him well, wished him thoughts and prayers. And Chris Pratt got blasted for doing that.
Right.
And James Gunn, his Guardians of the Galaxy director, you know, came to his defense and he was like, you know, look, in this situation, you know, thoughts and prayers are absolutely, you know, deserved and well-meaning. He's hoping the guy does better. It's not the same thing as when you're dealing with something like a school shooting or whatever.
Right.
You know, and absolutely, you get a situation like that. Yeah, at this point, it does ring hollow. You know, and, you know, we're seeing these great kids down there in your state of Florida that are doing something about it. And I think it's awesome. You know, I'm so proud of them. You know, I feel terribly for what they went through, but I'm so proud of them for stepping up the fight and, you know, defending themselves and trying to bring real change to the country.
Right. And one of the there was a movie that just came out. It's a documentary, so it's been hitting the film festivals, but it's called Holden On, H-O-L-D-E-N, On. It's based on a true story about a guy named Holden in Georgia, near Atlanta, Georgia. I can't think of the town. But he went through mental health and suicide and the whole issue. But when we went down to the film festival in Orlando and we saw this, the producer was there. And so the film was pretty heavy, and it was a good message to it and all that. But I remember the producer came up at the end, and he says, I'm here to give hugs if anybody needs a hug. And by that time, of course, I was crying. I mean, I couldn't hardly stop crying at that moment. And he came up to me and offered the hug, and that hug meant so much in that moment.
The
and I have gotten to be good friends now, but I'm like, just that authentic moment, that you know, that connection, and it can mean just so much.
Yeah,
it really does. You know,
of course, it's on the other side of that, though. It's difficult because, you know, what do you say now? What is socially acceptable to say when someone is going through these horrific things? You know, and I definitely think that it's causing everyone to maybe think, you know, before they speak. All
right.
This.
Yeah, sometimes, I think. Go ahead, Don.
Sometimes we need that more on Twitter than we see or social media, is that, you know, people tend to write and then think. And so I hope that the things that come out of this is that maybe we think with our hearts and compassion a little bit more, you know, before we write on Twitter. So,
yeah, for me, what I was going to say is I think more it's more a case of, you know, put up or shut up. You know, I mean, it's you can still say thoughts and prayers and, you know, be supportive, but show that too. Show the person, you know, love and that you care for them, and, you know, reach out and see how they're doing just because you're concerned for them. You know, the fact that the producer came up afterwards and gave you a hug because of the emotions that you were feeling, that's pure. You know, that is a true love for your fellow human being. And I think that's kind of where we need to get to.
And you've done that before with guys that you work with.
Yeah. My buddy Andrew, you know, I know I've mentioned this in the past on the show, but my buddy Andrew, he used to work at our place, and he was one of the maintenance guys, and he was just having a really, really bad day. And he's walking through our where we get checked in, and, you know, he looked like he was having a really bad day. And I said, dude, could you use a hug? And he's like, and he said, yeah. Now, you know, to understand, I'm a 5'6", 230-pound goofball of a guy. And Andrew is, I don't know, 5'9", 5'10", taller than me, slim, very attractive black man. And to see us two just hugging, because he said, yeah, and he, the look of relief on his face after that hug, I could tell that it connected with him, you know, and that it meant a lot to him. And he's been one of my closest friends ever since, you know, and we don't get to talk as much since he left work and went elsewhere. But, you know, we still talk from time to time, and I still care about this guy like crazy. You know, he's a hell of a human being, and, you know, being able to connect with a person and just know that one little thing you do can make all the difference in the world to them is, you know, the just the biggest thing in the world, you know.
Yeah, one of the things online that I will try and do at times, and sometimes I get very busy and forget it, but even to direct message somebody or send them a tweet, just say, hey, I'm thinking of you, or how are you doing, or, you know, just something to kind of show that, hey, you know, you matter to me right at that moment. And boy, some days you just melt somebody, you just melt some of the struggle they're going through away.
Exactly. You know, and you really, you can really make a huge difference in a person's life just by doing something small like that. You know, that's
absolutely.
That's, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it
so
can
John,
be.
What advice do you have for someone that's struggling with trauma?
The first thing, I guess, you know, you've got to get the support. You've got to reach out. And I know that's difficult to do. I know that if you've been hurt and abused, and the last thing you want to do is trust anybody. But essentially, you have to start somewhere and start to try and find somebody you can trust enough to open up just a little, because you need that support to go through this. You can't do it on your own. Trauma and abuse are just, they're horrible creatures, and they've sucked the life out of people for years. So if you try and continue on your own, you're just going to deplete yourself. My best advice would be, you know, take a chance, take a risk, but be cautious and careful of who you do this with, but take a chance and a risk on trusting someone to be support for you.
Yeah, that's a real big key thing. You know, before Beck and I got together, you know, it was a struggle for her, you know, and she was getting help through the county and everything. And once we got together and I was able to go with her to her doctor's appointments, and then eventually, you know, getting the insurance that we have now and finding her better doctors and all that. Just having, knowing you've got somebody that's back, you know, back up, you know,
right.
Somebody that's got your back and will support you. That's huge, you know, and it's hard to find that person sometimes. So,
I went through a couple. I had one therapist that, this is a point where I was really looking to kill myself every day. I did not want to survive. And so I started to reach out. And the psychologist, I was living in a small town, the psychologist came and met me. And it was before the holidays. And he listened to me for, you know, the hour. And then he says, well, I'll have my son follow up. He's a psychologist or counselor, and he can probably help you better. Well, the holidays came and went. Nobody followed up. The next thing I got from him was a bill in the mail. And, I just went off on the guy, because I'm like, you didn't follow up, and that meant tremendous amount to me at that moment.
Yeah.
But fortunately, after that, I found a therapist that she turned out to be one of the best therapists I've ever had. And she and I just clicked, and I know I challenged her pretty hard. I probably made her life, you know, miserable for a while, but you know, she was able to, everything I kind of threw back at her, she'd kind of throw back at me, and she was the best thing, you know. So I guess that's the other thing too, when you're dealing with this stuff, if one person isn't working out, you know, go find the person that is, because you know, some you click with and some you don't. So
that's for sure.
That's a really important piece of advice. That really is. You know, with Beck and I, and I mention us because it's, you know, it's strictly our experience, but it helps, you know, for people to see, well, this is what we went through. You know,
right.
You went through what you went through. We went from doctor to doctor to doctor until we found a fit. And the doctor that she has now is awesome, you know, but it took her over 20 years to find her.
Right.
And sometimes, it, you know, be patient. You know, sometimes it can take that long, you know, but if you're not getting the treatment that you need, and it's subjective, it's all subjective, but if you're not getting the help you need, the treatment you need, find someone else, you know, and don't give up looking, you know.
Right.
And it's hard because, you know, some doctors are great and their approach is great, and some doctors are great in a different way and their approach might not be what's right for you.
Right.
You know?
And back in 1991, when I was going through this, I mean, of course, there really wasn't the internet to go search on or mm-hmm. things like that. So you were truly on your own. But even I found at that point, even the medical staff, the doctors, and you know, even a ambulance crew that came out, they didn't understand what anxiety was. They didn't know what a panic. I mean, I think panic attack was kind of the new terminology at the time. And so,
yeah.
In some ways, I found that I almost have to educate some of the people that I'm trying to ask for help from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That gets to be a challenge. So,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's it's funny because back in 1991, you probably had to open what, for some of our younger listeners aren't aware of, before the internet, there was this thing called the phone book.
Yeah.
And it had yellow pages to it. And that's
yep.
what you looked in. That was our internet. So,
yep.
Don, in your pre-interview, you mentioned new music. What is your connection to music?
This
really hits home for me because I play music.
Yeah, I've been playing the piano ever since I was, I think, in second grade, about 8 years old. When,
wow.
For some reason, when I was a kid, I just knew I wanted to play the piano. I really had never been around it, so my parents bought me a $35 used old upright piano. Had beautiful sound, and
wow.
I delivered newspapers. I did odd jobs to pay for my cheap little piano lessons back then, and it just resonated with me. It was just something that I had a talent for, and so I took lessons for many years. I played in churches. I played, you know, high school choir, things like that, but then I started just sitting down at the keyboard and just having fun creating whatever came out. For a long time, there was no recording equipment, so, you know, most of that stuff just got lost. But
yeah.
Now with recording equipment, I can record, you know, and grab everything. But I noticed that when I play the piano or I create the music, it's like a conversation. So in a conversation, after it's over, you can't repeat that conversation. You can repeat, you know, concepts and thoughts from it, but not...
Mm-hmm.
like it was. And that's the same way with my music. I play it and then I can't go back and replay it, which is a little frustrating for me. So if I don't record it at the time, then it's lost. But
yeah.
But the music to me is healing for me as well. It's a way I can creatively express myself that I can't put into words or thoughts. It's very relaxing. It's just a form of communication that I can communicate where I can't find words to say the same things.
That resonates with me.
Yeah.
Big time.
And it's all,
you know,
relaxing music, so.
Yeah. You know, I've been playing guitar for over 30 years, and sometimes the most peaceful things that get me through are, you know, if I grab a guitar and I'm, you know, either writing something for myself or I'm trying to learn somebody else's song, you know, and it's really satisfying, you know, and I've been teaching for a few years now, and, you know, seeing some of my students experience that same joy, like when they figure out, you know, how to play The Sound of Silence, for example,
right.
You know, they get a big old grin, you know, and they're all excited because they're playing it. And it's like they played it like that, and I'm playing it like that, and it's all exciting. And
yep.
It is therapeutic. Music really is such a therapeutic thing.
Yeah,
so that's great.
Yeah, and so some of the CDs I put out are somebody told me, well, you've been through so much, but your music sounds hopeful and inspiring or beautiful. And I'm like, that's because the song tends to come after I've kind of gone through that step of whatever I was dealing with. And so out of it is kind of like the lesson or what I learned, but it's through music and notes. So
nice. Yeah, for me, it's more a coping mechanism. I can't speak at the time that I'm going through it. So a lot of my stuff sounds, you know, dark and miserable.
Yeah.
But it's cathartic for me, you know.
Yeah, and there's times that I do that and nobody else hears it but me. But, you know, I'll get pretty dark times. So.
But
sometimes
it's
a process.
Yep.
Please excuse the fire truck in the background if you heard that. We live in between a fire station and a hospital, so.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, one of the things I miss on music nowadays is I have a digital piano, but I miss the old upright wood piano that you could just feel the vibration from it, and you fed off of that. And, you know, a digital piano doesn't quite have that same feel, so. So.
Yeah, I get that, you know. For me, it's tube amps, you know. I've got a great amp, you know, but it's a solid state. And it sounds very tubey, but there's a realness to it, you know. So maybe someday when I hit the lottery.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our show for today. So, Don, would you like to tell us about your new website and where people can find you on social media quickly?
Yeah, my social media, most of the time I spend my life on Twitter, so it's at MindBodyThought. The website is MindBodyThoughtsPlural.com. So it's MindBodyThoughts.com and Twitter is MindBodyThought. But I try to write about, you know, everything from healing, consciousness, awareness, stress, relaxation, health, mental health, and just, you know, some of what I see go on in the world, too. I try and write about that as well. So,
yeah, it's a great website. It's very diverse, you know, plus your music is on there, too, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very exciting.
And soon,
when do you... I'm sorry, go ahead.
And hopefully soon the new book. So I'm in... phase, and then I'll pass it off to an editor, and then I'm hoping by midsummer I'm done with it. So I hope
you read my mind, because that's the question that I was going to ask you is when you thought maybe that was going to come out.
Yeah, and it took me a while to find the title for it, but now it's the title is going to be Overcoming Challenges. So that's where it's headed.
Awesome. You know, when it comes out, you know, we would love to have you back on to promote it too. Just to get some awareness going on it and everything.
Sounds good.
Definitely. You know where to find me.
Yep. Yeah, you and I stay connected on Twitter, so
that's for sure.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for being with us, Don. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us this morning, and thank you for telling your story and, you know, it's
inspiring
it's
others.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very inspirational, and we're honored to have you on today.
Yeah, and if anybody wants, I mean, if they reach out to me, I always try to respond. Sometimes it gets a little hard to keep up, but I do try to respond to anybody that reaches out to me. And, you know, I'm glad I could be on here with you, both of you today. So I'm feel very honored and thankful.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Well, hang on the line. We are going to be playing out to Baby Blue Sky by Nick Hayward. Everybody have a great day and happy birthday, baby.
Thank you, Dave.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0. Hey.